Greetings, adventurers. Today we're excited to introduce you to a new story, Dark Dice, a horror podcast that blurs the line between actual play and audio drama, where the story is determined by the roll of the dice. Six adventurers embark on a journey into the ruinous domain of the Nameless God. They will never be the same again. One of the players is not what they seem after a doppelganger, a creature that can assume the form and voice of whatever it kills, infiltrates the team. As the players are picked off and replaced one at a time, can they figure out who the monster is before it's too late? Can you? Here's a quick example of what our show sounds like.
The shambler with the jar of liquid inside of him.
Soren Arkwright let loose an arrow that cracked the glass, passing through the spine of the creature. The shambler still managed to maintain its forward momentum, but stumbled as it eagerly tried to bite and swipe at Soren, landing near his feet.
As Jeff Goldblum has now joined our cast, Dark Dice is available however you listen to podcasts.
Travelcast, episode 487. The Travelcast is an audio fiction magazine that brings strange stories by strange authors to strange listeners, such as yourself. I'm your host, Norm Sherman. Great story for you folks this week. Great original story. But first, 100-word drabble. Drabbles are short stories, exactly 100 words, no more, no less. And sometimes you'll hear them as little appetizers on the show. Our drabble this week is Hypoxia by Sean McKendrick. Here goes. The aliens are messing with the oxygen, Grayson gasped. Disconcerting, think. Why say? Bad headache? Can't think straight, Grayson squinted. And I'm hallucinating. You look like a giant beetle or something. Hilarity idea. Of course the human colleague Jones, I. Jones chittered. I'm losing it. I can't read these controls. Jones tapped the panel, lowering the oxygen further. I fix. Grayson started to stand and staggered to his hands and knees. We've got to watch out for each other, Jones. They're somewhere on the ship. Jones waved his pincers. We endure with unison, soft meat friend. Yeah, you and me, buddy. Our story this week is Bad Meat by Chip Hauser. Chip has stories in Bourbon Pen, Podcastle, Daily Science Fiction, and various other markets. Dark Morsels, a chapbook of his very short fiction, is forthcoming from Red Bird Chapbooks. He's a graduate of Odyssey, a practicing architect, and an avid walker of slow dogs, and an equally avid yet even slower hiker of mountains. Links to his other stories and other oddities can be found at chiphauser.com. And so, without further ado, we bring you Bad Meat by Chip Hauser. Chuck rushed along the crowded jetway, dodging the ever-shifting tides of people. The flight attendant said the closest restroom was past the last gate, by the food court. Hopefully he'd make it. He should have known better than to fly. His bowels had been a wreck lately, and the turbulence turned them to water. But he had a soft spot for his niece, Molly, and wanted to be there when she started chemo. Squeezing between a slow-moving knot of squabbling vacationers and a pacing businessman on a cell, Chuck pushed past a young man selling noise-canceling headphones and in front of a woman standing staring up at the flight monitors. He was sliding between a rolling suitcase and a blue-vested attendant pushing a wheelchair when his foot caught on something and he fell hard into the terrazzo. The impact jarred his bowels free with a damp squelch.
You need a
thief! Oh, hell no!
A deep voice somewhere behind him.
That ain't right.
Too mortified to look up, Chuck could tell by people's feet they were giving him a wide berth. The wheelchair he'd tripped over had stopped. A thin-legged kid sat in it, one hand covering his mouth. He was trying not to laugh, but not doing such a good job. With his big eyes and spiky magenta wig, he might have looked cartoonish if he wasn't so clearly sick. His skin was drawn and translucent, the bones of his hands protruding fan-like, like the pallid tail of a fish. Behind him, the deep voice said,
"Hell no!"
again. It was the blue-vested attendant who lifted a walkie-talkie to his mouth. How humiliating. The kid was about Molly's age. At least he got him to laugh, maybe forget he was sick for a bit. That's something. Chuck pushed himself to his knees. The air in the terminal was cool against his jeans, the denim glued to his butt and thighs. I didn't mean to laugh, the kid said. He was leaning forward now, holding out Chuck's shoe. He couldn't quite bring himself to make eye contact as he looked at the shoe. I'm sorry, he muttered. It's okay, the kid said. It was an accident. Despite himself, Chuck laughed. That kind of wordplay always reminded him of Molly. The kid's face scrunched up. Oh no, I didn't mean it like that. All good, kid. Sometimes you just gotta laugh. The crowd gave Chuck plenty of space, clearing a path as he hurried to the restroom. Mercifully, there was no line. He ran into a stall, barely getting his jeans down in time. It felt like victory. The diarrhea was brutal, like hot, angry tendrils scrabbling to escape. He closed his eyes and took long, slow breaths. His insides had been a mess for a while now, a couple of months maybe, but not this bad. His jeans vibrated. It had to be Molly. She was so excited to see him. Chuck dug his phone out. He'd missed a bunch of texts. You're over Pennsylvania right now. It says your plane landed. Hurry. This place is so boring. Can't wait to see you, Chunkle. Chunkle. That always made him smile. When Molly first started making words, she'd repeated his name over and over. Uncle Chuck. Uncle Chuck. And eventually out came Chunkle. Chuck replied. Looking forward to seeing you too, Molls. On my way to baggage claim. Chunkle was just the start of Molly's wordplay. When she was 6 or 7, a few years before the leukemia, she'd invited Chuck to go camping in the backyard. He looked at the small tent, at the setting sun catching the cloud of swarming bugs, and said, "This is going to be spectacular." Unaware of his sarcasm, Molly'd said, "No, Chunkle, it's going to be tentacular." That moment alone hadn't quite made what followed worth it, awake all night in a tent with a broken zipper, and Molly insisting the flashlight stay on. She'd loved every minute of it, though. Chuck had reminded himself of that for weeks as he applied and reapplied calamine lotion to his bite-riddled flesh. You're the best. When we're together, we're Team Charlie, Molly'd said when he promised to be there for her first treatment. Chuck plus Molly is Charlie, like Jolly. Get it? She was the silly one, the smart one. Chuck was happy to be her audience. Another bout of diarrhea hit. In the stinging aftermath, the nausea lingered, a steady, toxic heat pulsing through his abdomen. Chuck bent forward, trying not to groan, palms sandwiched between thigh and stomach. When Chuck felt marginally better, he pulled his jeans off one leg at a time and hung them on the coat hook. He tried to salvage his underwear, pressing wads of toilet paper on the soaked areas. In the distance, someone screamed. Probably someone out in the terminal. Christ, muttered someone by the sinks. Get your kid under control. Everyone in the restroom laughed. The laughter stopped when another scream joined the first. This one long and deep and clearly not a child. Then another, and another, and the sound of glass shattering, stampeding feet, then gunshots. We got us a shooter, someone said with a gravelly drawl. Stall doors slammed and locked. A horrified silence held in the restroom as the occupants listened to the distant, muffled cries, bullets impacting with unidentifiable crunches and crashes of things soft and yielding or hard and brittle. Chuck dropped his underwear, the sodden fabric hitting the tiles with a wet slap. He stepped up onto the toilet seat. A man ran into the restroom, his breathing heavy. Where's the goddamn backup? He yelled. These things are everywhere. Marco, Sylvia, Tom, all... A wet gurgle, the squeak of a sneaker, something plastic shattered on the floor, leaving nothing but the crackle of static. Sweet Jesus, the man with the drawl yelled. The stalls racked back and forth once, twice, three times. The man kept screaming through it all until he didn't. The following silence broken only by a crash near the sinks. Chuck's heart pounded. What the fuck was happening? Was he really going to die half-naked in an airport restroom coated in his own shit? The toilet auto-flushed regularly as Chuck knelt on top of it, washing his exposed underside with cool air. The man in the stall next to Chuck was whispering a soft, desperate rhythm, some kind of prayer. Before Chuck had a chance to recognize any of the words, the man yelped and slammed to the floor, his fingers scrabbled across the bottom of the divider. Chuck hopped down and grabbed the man's wrists. I got you! The man had thick fingers, a gold wedding band. Inch by inch, Chuck pulled him further into his stall. Carefully pressed white cuffs, blue enameled cufflinks, up to the elbows, then to the top of his head, dark curly hair, thinning. The man's dark eyes were wet with fear, but his whispers were calm, words not meant for Chuck. I got you, Chuck said again. He held the man tight, pulling as hard as he could. Chuck's legs weakened against the rhythmic tugging. The man's spine popped like tiny, muffled firecrackers. He couldn't see what had happened to the other end of the man and didn't want to. My daughter, the man said, his wide eyes locked on Chuck's. She graduates. Whatever was pulling the man gave a mighty yank, and he was wrenched from Chuck's grasp. Chuck slammed into the divider and landed on his side. He reached for the man, but watched helplessly as he slid away, fingers clawing at the tile as he dragged on. Chuck scooted backwards, pulse hammering in his throat. The thing dragging the man away was some kind of gigantic tentacle. If it weren't so impossible, so horrifying, it would be spectacular. Tentacular. Chuck's laughter echoed in the restroom, far too loud in that small room swimming with bodily fluids. This was way worse than camping, he thought, which made him laugh harder. What was wrong with him? People were dying, lots of people. His legs were caked with his own shit. He was sitting bare-assed on the filthy floor of a public restroom, and he was suddenly laughing so hard he was crying. Must be a stress reaction. He knew he needed to calm himself, to get back up on the toilet and hide, but the image just made him laugh harder. He stopped mid-laugh when the greasy, brownish-black tentacle, broad as his thigh, wound into the stall. It probed his sopping underwear, recoiled, then rose before him. The tentacle smelled sharp, like ammonia. It hovered, swaying back and forth like an enormous cobra about to strike. The underside of the tentacle was covered in pulsing suckers, circular and pale. What was it waiting for? The tentacle dipped forward, and Chuck thought, this is it. The tentacle suddenly whipped backwards, slapped against the partition, and shot back under the divider. What the hell had just happened? Chuck waited, expecting the tentacle to snatch him and haul him away, to a horrible death by constriction or suffocation or whatever tentacle things did. But nothing happened. When the screaming eventually stopped, he stepped down. The restroom was quiet, other than the slosh of water from a broken pipe somewhere. He did his best to clean up the half-dried mess coating his legs. Was all that blood his? But toilet paper didn't cut it. He needed paper towels. Lots of them. He opened the stall door and peeked out. Other than a few abandoned rolling bags and a cell phone buzzing across the water-slick floor, the restroom was empty. Mirrors were shattered. A paper towel dispenser lay cracked and soaking in a sink. A chunk of the countertop was missing, blood smeared across the ragged edge. He washed up as quickly and quietly as he could, keeping an eye on the entrance, then searched the abandoned bags. Surely their owners wouldn't begrudge him their clean pants. Better than a middle-aged man standing naked in the middle of a public restroom. He found a pair of enormous paisley pajama bottoms. Ugly, but perfect. They even had a pocket for his cell phone. Chuck leaned against the wall by the opening to the concourse and listened. He heard voices, not close, but definitely people talking. Cautiously, he looked out into the terminal. There was no sign of the giant tentacle or the creature it was attached to. An explosion of abandoned objects scattered across the water, spreading out from the restroom. A shattered tablet, masks, purses, a splatter of green smoothie, glasses and jackets and hats, sodden newspapers and magazines and sandwiches. Not 10 feet away, the wheelchair kid's magenta wig lay like a sea anemone on its side. Chuck picked it up. Damn. Poor kid. Because he didn't have a shitty enough deal already. Written in Sharpie on the inside, his name. Roger. A red silk skirt glided raft-like past him across the floor, water carrying it toward the broken glass and twisted mullions of what had once been the exterior wall. Out in the tarmac, a huge plane lay in a bent heap, twisted like an empty beer can. The voices were coming from a group of 15 or 20 people huddled around a TV near the food court. Everyone there looked old or sick, shoulders hunched in loose clothes, mouths hanging open as they stared at the TV. Chuck walked over, staring at the images across the screen. A clip of what looked like bad science fiction. A sunset sky filled with hundreds of enormous octopi floating down. Their bodies ballooned like umbrellas, followed by shots of giant tentacles pulling people from giant glass towers in Hong Kong. Off docks in Hamburg and bicycles in Mumbai, dragging flailing tourists across the sands of Giza. This was happening everywhere. Christ! Did the tentacles get Molly? A horrible thought. It would be a sort of mercy. He was disgusted with himself for thinking it. He walked closer to the crowd by the TV. They looked like the least likely people to survive whatever just happened, which was another awful thought, and he knew it. The kid, Roger, was there, sitting in his wheelchair with his blue vested attendant. Chuck was flooded with relief. He walked over and held out the wig. "Glad you made it, Roger." "Oh, hi," Roger said, taking the wig. "Nice jammies. You feeling better?" That seemed like a bizarre question, given the circumstances. What just happened? A giant squid invasion from outer space. Pretty wild, huh? The news said octopus. Big surprise, the news is wrong. They're squid. Torpedo-shaped head. 10 arms, not 8. Still a cephalopod, but way creepier. Plus, better aerodynamic shape for flying and those blades for directional control. Chuck had no idea what to say. Where is everyone? What do you mean? Who's in charge? Where's the police or TSA or whatever? These people all look sick. Obviously, Roger said, in that way kids had that made you feel stupid. I'm not following. Chuck jerked when his phone buzzed. It was Molly, a call, not a text. What the fuck? Chuck said, then to Roger. Sorry, it's my niece. Hello?
Chunkle, something happened. Something terrible.
Her voice was pitched higher than normal.
A giant slimy thing dragged Mom away, and the doctors and nurses were screaming and running and things were breaking.
It's okay, Malls. I'm here. Slow down. Roger was sitting forward, listening. Chuck noticed he had a fresh oval scar line on the back of his head, just above his neck.
And I was so dopey, so maybe I was hallucinating, but it felt so real. I don't know what happened or what I should do, and I'm alone and full of tubes and wires and needles, and I can't move. There's no one to help.
Malls, Chuck said. It's going to be okay. We'll figure it out. We're alive. We survived. Can you sit tight until I get there? I'm leaving the airport now.
Please, hurry.
I'll be there as fast as I can.
Okay.
She took a deep breath.
I love you, Chunkle.
You too. We'll get through this. Team Charlie, remember? When he hung up, Roger said, What's hers? Her what? What kind of cancer does she have? Chuck looked at him, confused. How do you know she has cancer? Roger looked at Chuck for a second or two, then waved his hand at the other survivors. It's sort of a theme. What, cancer? As soon as he said it out loud, he knew it was true. How had he not put that together? But I don't, he started to say, then stopped. Of course he did. It's okay, Roger said. You're still alive? He fist-bumped Chuck's knee. Welcome to borrowed time. Malls would like this kid. He had some spice to him. I better get going. She's all alone. Yeah, Roger looked around. Is your mom or dad or someone coming to get you? As soon as he said it, he felt like a bastard. Sorry, I didn't... It's okay. Roger ran his fingers through his deflated wig. Look, I've gotta go. Molly's scared and alone. Roger nodded. His hands were still. Chuck couldn't just leave him here. You know, if it's not too weird, you're welcome to come along. Thanks, but I'm good, Roger said. I think staying here in the middle of this disaster makes sense. You should totally just leave me. Sure, I understand. Seriously? You think I want to stay stranded in this smashed-up terminal? Roger pulled on his wig. Let's go! Oh, that's right. You're a smartass. Chuck grabbed the handles and pushed the wheelchair through the terminal. Leukemia, he said, following the signs toward ground transportation. Molly has leukemia. Mine's pilocytic astrocytoma, Roger said. I guess they didn't get it all. What about you? Not sure, Chuck said. Hey, maybe when we get there you can help me figure out how to unhook Molly from those machines. Sure, Roger said. Chunkle. You heard that, huh? She sounds pretty upset. She's scared, but she's the stronger half of Team Charlie. We're gonna have to work on that, you know. The name? What's wrong with it? Well, for one, I feel left out. Fair point. That's Molly's department. Maybe we should live on a boat, Roger said. Okay, Chuck said. I'll bite. Why should we live on a boat? Well, then we could be the Charlie Rogers. He barely got it out before the giggles won. Chuck groaned, mostly for effect. A little dark, isn't it? Look around lately? You and Molly are gonna get along great, Chuck said, pushing Roger's wheelchair through the sliding doors into the passenger pickup zone, which was full of abandoned cars. that was our story. Hope you enjoyed it. When you see an opportunity to make gross diarrhea foley, you go for it. That's what my pa always taught me, and his pa before him. And I tell you, it's all I've ever known in this life, and that's a statement, not a fact. Don't know if I could change if I wanted to, tell you the truth. Don't know a lot of things. But I do know the Drabblecast uses a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives License, which means don't change it or sell it, but feel free to share it all you like. Tell a friend, write us a review on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. Spread the weird. Join the Drabblecast Discord. Meet other fans of weird fiction from around the world. There's an invite link on the top of our website at drabblecast.org. And if you want to help support the Drabblecast and bringing the world more free original fiction, Drabblecast style, for no cost, consider supporting us on Patreon. We really, really appreciate it. We're a small independent creator that pays authors pro rates and does everything it can to make this the one podcast that stands out most on your feed. Tossing us some monthly support not only allows us to stay afloat, it comes with bennies too. Ad-free episodes for one, but also how about more bonus episodes, interviews, access to our full archive of over 500 episodes, including our old paywalled content. Huzzah! Special thanks to our episode artist this week, Drabblecast art director Bo Kier. Check out his other majestic work at bokier.com. Our program this week was brought to you by Nicole Neely, Bo Kier, Audrey Kay, Jossie Gerwig, Sean Gentry, Melissa Knight, Wyatt Scott, Hot Dog Flavored LaCroix, Joe Pietras, Oren Pratt, Bart Epstein, Anna Rose, Maria Lovett, and yours truly, Norm Sherman. Reminding you, we've got to watch out for each other, Jones. They're somewhere on the ship.
Hello, friends. This is Mark Nell, executive producer of the Table Read podcast, where imagination meets performance. As we wrap up an incredible season one, we want to take a moment to express our heartfelt gratitude to each and every one of you who tuned in and supported us on this amazing journey. Season one was nothing short of extraordinary. We delved into captivating scripts that transported us to worlds beyond our imagination, thanks to the brilliant writers who delivered these works. But what really brought these stories to life were the talents of our amazing actors. But wait, the excitement doesn't end there. As we bid farewell to season one, we are thrilled to announce the launch of season two. Get ready for more gripping narratives, more unforgettable characters, and more mesmerizing performances that will keep you on the edge of your seat. We have some big surprises coming. The Force will definitely be with you. So stay tuned, stay engaged, and most importantly, stay excited. From all of us at the Table Read Podcast, thank you, and let's make season two even more memorable together.